You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. After her death last week, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is lying in repose today at the U.S. Supreme Court. Elsewhere in Washington, lawmakers are fighting over what happens next for the vacancy she leaves on the nation's highest court. It's the week in Washington. We're going to get the latest on some top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has the death of Justice Ginsburg and the jockeying around a replacement for her changed your view of the presidential race? Why or why not? And do you want to see Congress, the Senate, I guess in particular, move fast or slow before Election Day, after Election Day, before after Inauguration Day? Call 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Seungmin Kim is a reporter who covers the White House for The Washington Post. Seungmin, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, where do things stand in terms of process when it comes to the president nominating a replacement for Justice Ginsburg?
We're expecting the president to announce his nominee at a White House ceremony on this Saturday at 5 p.m. And I would say the suspension is building up to that moment, but I think our reporting shows that there is one clear front runner to be former Justice Ginsburg's successor, and that is Judge Amy Coney Barrett of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. She is based in Indiana. She was a finalist for the last vacancy for the retired Justice Anthony Kennedy. So we will hear from the president on Saturday about who he will nominate. And that's when the trains will really get moving in the Senate. Republican senators have been strategizing about how to make a vote work before the election. And while nothing is final yet, and the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is led by Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, who is a close Trump ally, he has not officially laid out the timetable, but we are looking at a schedule that would essentially put confirmation hearings that second full week of October, and eventually a confirmation vote in the last week of October. So right days before the election.
As you and your colleagues report, it's not a for sure done deal. It sounds like there's some jockeying within the White House and Senate over some other possible candidates based on, in part, the possible impact they could have on the election.
Definitely. I mean, the two finalists we have consistently written about are Judge Barrett and a separate circuit court judge, Barbara Lagoa of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Judge Lagoa is from Florida. She has the natural swing state appeal. And a lot of people around the president have made that case. She is someone who got a far more bipartisan vote in the Senate compared to Judge Amy Coney Barrett. Judge Barrett was confirmed on a near party line vote. I believe she only got about 3 Democratic Senate votes to support her, while Barbara Lagoa got 80 votes in favor of her confirmation under the Trump presidency, which is pretty remarkable considering how polarized the Senate is. But Judge Lagoa would be the second Latina on the Supreme Court. She'd be the first person from Florida. And we know how critical that Florida is to the president's reelection chances. So people around him are also making that calculation that this would be a really energizing pick for that state. And not just maybe in Florida, but perhaps in Arizona and in Texas.
Now, politically, a lot of Senate Republicans in 2016 with President Obama's Merrick Garland appointment laid out a principle that you shouldn't accept nominations in a presidential election year. Now they're coming up with new principles, I guess. How are they portraying that change of mind?
They are certainly singing a different tune here. Back in 2016, a lot of these Republican senators who were in the Senate back then when Mitch McConnell held up the process for Merrick Garland said their argument at the time was that, look, we are in an election year. We are close to an election. People have already started voting in the respective Democratic and Republican primaries, but they are certainly saying something different this time around. They're saying it is a different matter because the president and the Senate is controlled by the same party. And that means voters have essentially given them the go-ahead to go ahead and confirm someone so close to the election. But it is certainly, it comes down to the fact that Republicans want a conservative justice confirmed before the election. I mean, this is a once in a generation opportunity to cement a conservative majority on the court. And that is incredibly important for Senate Majority Mitch McConnell. And most Republicans, even for the ones who may be battling very closely watched Senate races this year.
And a lot of people are trying to figure out how different scenarios here affect races for the Senate, races for the president. My guess is nobody really knows, right?
Nobody really knows, because we're all kind of guessing here. But we've talked to several people working on these races and very familiar with these dynamics. And there's kind of a consensus view as consensus as you can get among Republicans that this does make the reelection prospects for two key senators in two you know purple to even blue states much more difficult. That's Cory Gardner of Colorado and Susan Collins of Maine. I mean, the Supreme Court vacancy definitely did concern Republicans about Senator Collins and Senator Gardner's prospects there. But Republicans also believe that it actually helps them in several key states. We're looking at, for example, Senator Tom Tillis in North Carolina and Senator Martha McSally of Arizona, both Republicans, and both, if you've looked at in public polling, actually run behind the president. It means they are down further from their respective Democratic challengers. The margin is bigger than perhaps the Trump-Biden margin in those states, if you look at public polling. So what Republicans hope that this court vacancy does is energize those voters, energize Republican voters or conservative voters who may have concerns about Tillis or McSally, and both have faced issues from their respective party bases in the past. They hope that this vacancy will essentially bring those voters home and get them excited. Tom Tillis, you've already seen frame his reelection race as a referendum on the court. So the more that this is kind of like a partisan, polarized Republican versus Democrat, red versus blue race, strategists believe that this actually helps, states such as North Carolina and Arizona in particular.
Looking at some of the top stories in national politics with Sungmin Kim from The Washington Post, let's turn to a couple other stories now. A spending bill. We have this yet another deadline to keep the government open, yada, yada. What's the latest there in Congress?
Well, some good news for people who are not fans of congressional dysfunction, so mostly the public. The House overwhelmingly approved a bipartisan bill late Tuesday that would keep the government funded through December 11th. There were some discussions and some wrangling between leadership, between Democratic and Republican senior officials about a farm program that had to be replenished. That farm program, very important, you know, not only to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, but senators in key states were up for re-election this fall, such as Senator Joni Ernst, who is in a tough re-election battle in Iowa. So this farm program was very important there. But House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin negotiated that deal, and it was a really chaotic several days, and because talks had actually abruptly collapsed late Friday night. But Pelosi and Mnuchin were able to come to an agreement. The Senate appears to be on track to take up that legislation. Senior Senate Republican officials said that was the plan for now. So once the House passes that, or once the Senate passes that and the president signs it into law, we should avert a shutdown before the end of this month.
Also, today, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson and Chuck Grassley from Iowa, both Republicans, released an interim report on their investigation into Joe Biden's son, Hunter, his ties with the Ukrainian company Burisma. Anything new there that hadn't already been in the public eye?
If a reading of it doesn't really show anything fresh, anything new, anything damning in that report, we saw it really does revive the attacks on the former vice president's son. And it does make the argument that you've heard from Republicans for some time that Hunter Biden's position on the board of this Ukrainian energy company was, quote, problematic. But one key thing is that the report did not show that it changed the Obama administration policy towards Ukraine, which has kind of been what Republicans had been trying to make that tie that essentially the Biden's, you know, personal financial interests were changing, you know, the administration's policy. This report did not make that leak, but it is clearly meant to try to damage the former vice president, the Democratic presidential nominee. It does revive the specter of the impeachment trial that we went through earlier this year. But again, much of the report really does rehash the information that was a part of the Republican defense during the impeachment proceedings last year. This kind of re-injects it into the news cycle.
In our last minute, Sungmin, you stumbled across a real Capitol Insider story recently, an elevator, a secret Capitol elevator in an old chimney.
Oh, that's right. This is what I love about being on Capitol Hill. You know, I've been reporting on the Hill for, I guess, 9 years now, and you learn something new and something quirky every day. I was following a senator down a hallway that's usually a senator's only hallway because I was talking with him for a story, and he, you know, opened the door to this elevator that I had never seen before, and it's not your standard elevator. It's very narrow. It's almost, it felt almost like a dumbwaiter just because how small it was. And I remarked on how tiny it was and how oddly shaped it was. And the senator said this actually used to be an old chimney. And we got off I believe it was the ground floor of the Capitol. I finished the interview and then I realized I was completely lost. I had no idea where I was. And I've been in the report. I've been a reporter on the Hill for nearly a decade. And I still did not know my way around the Capitols.
Did you find your way out? Or are you talking from us just outside the elevator?
I did eventually find my way out, but I had to walk around kind of this maze of Capitol tunnels for at least several minutes.
Sungmin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sungmin Kim covers the White House for The Washington Post. We talked to her today about some top stories in national politics.